Hi, and welcome to the Kubernetes podcast from Google. I'm Craig Box.
And I'm Adam Glick.
Welcome, everybody, to the week of Google Cloud Next. Next is just starting as we record our show this week, and we're having our live show here tomorrow. So we'll keep you up to date with the news as it happens this week, and we'll have something special in store for those of you who are able to join us tomorrow. In the meantime, what's making you happy this week, Adam?
Oh, just a plethora of things. Enjoying the Umbrella Academy on Netflix. Mm-hmm. I've started to tinker with Hearthstone, for any of you who are hooked on online digital games.
And who isn't?
And apparently not me. Oh. But we're seeing. I'm getting into it. It takes a while. It's a learning exercise. And then finally, I stumbled across a band while listening to one of the channels I listen to called Sunrise Skater Kids, which is one of what I've discovered is a number of bands by a guy named Jared Along. They are all basically meta parody bands of various musical styles, but all surprisingly entertaining. He's got a death metal one. He's got a screamo band. He's got a pop punk band.
So he's Weird Al for YouTube.
Yes, very much so. The song about death metal swimming in a swimming pool. And he does the entire thing with like water wings on. Just beautiful.
It's a visual art form. You have to watch it online.
True enough.
I enjoyed a very long Saturday this week. You may remember episode 43, I said that Tuesday just vanished. It completely disappeared for me. But in return, I had 44 hours of Saturday and I enjoyed both ends of them. Had a lovely flight and managed to watch a couple of films on the way over. Do you ever find on a flight there's enough time if you get the requisite nap in the middle, you can watch all of the first film and then two thirds of the second one. So I've got a third of a film I have to watch when I fly next.
I see. You will have to let me know what your daytime escrow service is that stocks that all up for you, that you can hold it like that. But I'm curious what film you did not finish.
I did not finish On the Basis of Sex, which is the biopic about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I did, however, a few months back watch the documentary RBG about her, which was also available on the flight, and I can thoroughly recommend that. And in a week or so, I should hopefully fill you in on how the final third of this movie was.
Excellent.
Let's get to the news.
The annual Google Cloud Next conference is kicked off today. Perhaps the biggest news that touches the Kubernetes world was the announcement of Anthos. Anthos is Google Cloud's managed Kubernetes platform that provides container orchestration, configuration management, service mesh via Istio, cloud build integration for CI/CD, and connects with their newly announced serverless offering Cloud Run. Anthos is the new name for cloud services platform that Google Cloud announced last July, and the GA demo came with some interesting new details and upcoming features. The first of these was that Anthos will not only do hybrid deployments, which were announced and demonstrated last year, but will now do multi-cloud as well. As part of the keynote, a connection to another cloud provider was demonstrated. Google Cloud also showed off a connection to other Kubernetes clusters that aren't part of GKE, giving you a single view of all of your container clusters, regardless of distribution or location. They also demonstrated the ability to install Kubernetes applications from the GCP marketplace to these other clusters.
In related news, Google Cloud announced the beta of Anthos Migrate. Anthos Migrate is a migration tool that takes existing monolithic applications and breaks them down into smaller microservices in containers, then moves them into Anthos or GKE. We'll dive deeper on this topic in today's show. Google also announced a host of partnerships with Anthos across system integrators and hardware and software vendors. Finally, they announced Cloud Run and Cloud Run on GKE. Cloud Run is a new managed serverless service built on the open-source Knative project. Cloud Run allows you to run serverless apps in Google Cloud or on Anthos, thus giving you the convenience of serverless apps in the cloud as well as the portability to run them wherever your GKE clusters are running.
Cloud Foundry has announced that Project Irini, the new vowel-heavy Kubernetes-based runtime, has passed its first test and will now enable customers to choose which orchestration for containers they would like to use, the existing Diego or Kubernetes. Conceptually similar to Docker supporting application stacks on either Swarm or Kubernetes, we're glad to see more vendors supporting the infrastructure of the future.
The Open Policy Agent, or OPA for short, has been approved by the CNCF Technical Operating Committee for incubation. This promotes OPA out of the sandbox that it entered in March of 2018. The project exists to help organizations define common policies, and they're executed as queries in a new language called Rego. A sub-project of OPA called Gatekeeper integrates OPA with Kubernetes and is a collaboration of Google, Styra, and Microsoft.
CRI-O, or Cryo, has been accepted into the CNCF incubation stage. Cryo was originally designed by Red Hat and Google and is an implementation of the Container Runtime Interface that connects to Open Container Initiative compatible runtimes such as Containerd or gVisor. The project is currently maintained by employees of Red Hat, Intel, and SUSE.
Cloud Native Build Packs, tools for taking code and building OCI compatible images, have entered beta. Originally developed by Heroku and adopted by platforms like Cloud Foundry and Knative, Build Packs auto-detect the dependencies and language of your code and build container images without the need to make and maintain Docker files. A primary benefit of this pattern is avoiding having to manually rebuild, update, or rebase your code if something in the build pack changes, such as a security vulnerability being patched in one of the included components. This helps lessen your management and security burden.
Deep dives into new 1.14 features are starting to roll out on the Kubernetes blog. Michelle Owl of Google, Matt Schallert, and Selena Ward of Uber have posted celebrating the general availability of local persistent volumes. First available in 1.7 and betaed in 1.10, a local persistent volume represents a file volume directly connected to a node. This is important as you can set up a persistent volume claim, or PVC, that makes sure that if a pod needs to be moved or restarted, it happens on the same host that has the persistent volume. It's just a shame they didn't call them PVC pipes.
This week's regularly scheduled vulnerability is not in Kubernetes, but instead is in Envoy, the cloud-native proxy. Two CVEs, a null parsing bug and a path normalization bug, both rated high, were patched in 1.9.1. That necessitated the release of new software that includes it, and new Istio releases have been pushed in both 1.0 and 1.1 series.
Rainforest has posted a blog this week talking about their migration to Kubernetes from Heroku. They talked about hitting limits with scaling and looking to a number of alternatives, including Elastic Beanstalk, Elastic Container Service, Convox, and Kubernetes. They talked through why Kubernetes was the best choice, and then which Kubernetes service to use as they evaluated the three major cloud providers. They provided some good insights and evaluation rationale for anyone considering Kubernetes and Kubernetes as a managed service.
Google Cloud has announced expanded role-based access control with the beta of Google Groups for GKE. This enables GKE administrators to not only use GCP user accounts and IAM identities for control, but also now G Suite groups. New documentation has been posted to help users get started.
Start up your Win machine and throw that goat, because Red Hat has announced MetalCube, a way to more easily set up and manage Kubernetes on bare metal servers. MetalCube was created to provide an alternative to customers who were having to install a full OpenStack environment. The project is still new with just 6 contributors, but the project is live on GitHub, and they're happy to have more people join in.
Crew, the kubectl plugin manager, has been accepted as a sub-project of SigCLI. Crew was developed by Luke Burchard and Amit Alp Balkan from Google Cloud and is itself implemented as a kubectl plugin.
Finally, gVisor finally has a website. Located in the new online Cool Kids Neighborhood, TLD, of .dev, gVisor.dev provides a much friendlier place to learn about the sandbox container runtime and get involved in the project than the previous GitHub page. Check it out, and you can even see their new Space Helmet logo.
And that's the news.
Issy Benchal is a director of software engineering with Google Cloud. He leads the team responsible for migration technology and led the team building Anthos Migrate. Previous to his time at Google, he founded numerous companies, including Velostrata, which was acquired by Google Cloud. Welcome to the show, Issy.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Good to have you here.
Thanks. Same here.
Congratulations on the announcement. When people are adopting a new platform like Kubernetes or GKE, do you find that they pick up old applications, or do you find that they use only for new applications or some combination of the two?
That's an interesting question. So we find quite often that customers are initially starting with cloud native when they come to this new platform like Kubernetes, but then they realize all the benefits that come with it. You know, the agility, you know, developer productivity, the density, all the benefits that come with orchestration like Kubernetes, and say, hey, I wish we could do the same for all the legacy workloads that we have on-prem, and could we do something like that for them? And that's where it becomes, you know, the appetite to start and modernize those workloads.
How are people migrating their apps today? Right now, when they want to get into Kubernetes, what's the path people have to take?
Maybe I should step back, Adam, and tell you a little bit about how they're migrating today before even going to Kubernetes. Would that make sense?
Sure.
So at Velostrata, I mean, we've been doing, you know, migration for several years, focusing on enterprise workloads and making sure that they're basically onboarding the workloads in a way that is most transparent and provide least disruption, reduce the downtime. We developed this unique streaming technology that really makes sure that on one hand, they get early validation. They also get reduced risk which is something that obviously CIOs are really, really care about, and their workloads to be running so they can test before they migrate. They can basically revert back if something doesn't work. So provided this whole technology and solution that makes them work. And that's how they've been working. We call this, as you know, like more lift and shift, mm-hmm. like migrate workloads as is. And that has been kind of the mainstream way of enterprises migrating to cloud and realizing all the benefits that come with going into the cloud and, you know, realizing the fact that when they move to the cloud, you know, they get all the services that are available to them, the security and reliability that is unmatched for, and of course, the agility that comes with IaaS. But as they've been moving to the cloud, they also realize that that's a good time also to modernize. And to your question that you asked before, when they're realizing that in addition to lift and shift, they get the benefits of, you know, write once, run everywhere. Mm-hmm. They can get the benefits of density, all the benefits that we'll talk more about that comes with orchestration platform like Kubernetes. Then they say, hey, can we do something to modernize? And can we modernize workloads that we already have, right? You know, with all, you know, the fact that even though they have workloads that are running, that are written, you know, from scratch, they have tons of legacy workloads. And until today, they didn't have any good effective solution to modernize. When they start to containerize or modernize, they usually what they do, if they decide to do it before, they start to get into a very tedious process of, you know, breaking the monoliths, breaking the workloads, making them. And that is a very tedious, very long, very expensive process that effectively blocks their migration to the cloud. So then the enterprises get into some dilemma, right? On one hand, they've decided that they want to move to the cloud. On the other hand, if they insist on using the manual way of doing modernization, it takes a long time. They get stuck and they're, you know, in a position where they're not getting their work done, which is one of the reasons why, you know, they started to do some so-called local modernization, which is part of the Anthos GK on-prem offering. But in general, as I said, the migration has been either lift and shift, but then it doesn't address the needs of modernization, or if they start to modernize, they get stuck and takes years of project and not much progress.
Well, let's have a look then at what it was like in the VM world before Kubernetes mm-hmm. was a platform.
From physical to virtual or?
Well, even from virtual to cloud.
Okay.
If you think back a few years ago where Puppet and Chef and so on were the new hotness, people would sometimes just lift the VM as it was. They'd say, mm-hmm. I have a VM format thing. I'm going to convert sure. it to a machine image. And then the other approach is I'm going to rewrite everything, or I'm going to take the bits that are on that and then write some scripts that will let me deploy into both places. Clearly, there's pros and cons to both situations. What have you seen people do in those two cases?
Again, it really is essentially a mix, right? We see some customers that are essentially deciding that they want to, you know, rewrite everything, or people are deciding to be more pragmatic. And they say, okay, let's, you know, migrate the workloads as is. And as phase two, we'll modernize. What we see, there's no clear cut, right? It really depends on the customer situation. For instance, there are customers that have, for numerous reasons, decided that they need to move away from their existing hosted or private data center, for instance. They need to evacuate it in order to avoid like renewing their mm-hmm. contract. So they need to move everything. You know, we've been customers saying, you know, our data center has been in a prime real estate. We already sold it, literally. And now we need to evacuate everything, no matter what. In this case, they don't have time to modernize everything before that.
So they're going
to
do the quickest possible thing they can do.
Quickest possible, lift and shift, move into the cloud, and then in phase two, you modernize.
Right.
Some other customers take the other approach, right? They say, you know what? I don't want to be in a situation where I actually migrate the workloads and I don't get the benefits of the cloud because it's a lift and shift. I don't get access to some of the services, et cetera. I don't get the benefits of agility, of, you know, scale out, et cetera, because I'm using the old way. And they decide on doing all the optimization and rewrite initially on-prem, and then they move. You know, so it really depends. By the way, another consideration is it's not binary all or nothing. Mm-hmm. It depends also on the type of the workloads that you have. Maybe if you have legacy workloads, if you have a third-party workload, there's not much choice. You don't have access to the source code. You cannot play with it. You cannot rewrite it. Some other workloads are just not always able to do the change. So it's really, I don't think that there is a binary, you know, all or nothing. It's typically a mix of the two.
What are the lessons that you've learned from doing the lift and shift wholesale migrations?
So the lessons that we've learned is that on one hand, for some workloads, this is a great, sufficiently workable solution. And by the way, when we say lift and shift, right, there's also kind of variants, like you can lift and shift and optimize, mm-hmm. you can right size, you can do things that are kind of at the outset, and those things help get for some workloads what they need. However, there are some drawbacks to the solution, right? For instance, one of the things that we see is that, you know, people are struggle with cost efficiencies associated with VM migration. The fact that you move a VM that was over-provisioned on your VMware environment and you didn't have to pay for it because you pay for the host and you don't pay for the instance. And then now you move to pay by the instance model. And then you have to account for the VM to VM migration to make sure there's enough capacity in that instance in order to avoid, you know, spikes. Then you actually end up overpaying for the workload, then it becomes really, really a cost prohibitive solution. Or if you're trying to right size too much, you might affect the performance of the application. So what we found out is that it actually affects the cost. And there's one of the things that people have been trying to see, how can I increase my density? The other thing that happens is that some customers say that, you know, by virtue of doing lift and shift, some of the burden that I had in terms of, for instance, I still have the same number of operating system images that I need to manage. Nothing changed. So I still have to patch all my OS images. I still have to pay for the licenses of them. I still have to worry about many things that I had to worry on-prem. So in that sense, it's not an advancement. It's just the same thing. And given that I move to the cloud, they say, hey, there are better ways to do it. We know that, right? We know that Kubernetes offers, among other things, the ability to eliminate OS management, the ability to write once, write everywhere, the ability to, and all those things, you don't get the benefit of them. And therefore, for many of the workloads, it's not as satisfactory a solution. That's why we've been thinking about ways to make it better. But again, I don't think it's, again, black and white, like not all workloads are fit for containers. But on the other hand, there are many that are, and by virtue of not doing them, you're actually losing a lot and not getting all the benefits you can get from migrating to the cloud in the first place.
So the offering you've announced today is called Anthos Migrate. Mm-hmm. Talk us through that program.
Sure. Some of you may have had the chance to even see today's keynote in which there was a live demonstration of the solution. Very exciting for us. Yeah, so what Anthos Migrate is really, I would say, revolutionary first-of-a-kind solution that enables to take existing VM-based stateful workloads, and I emphasize state because it's not just the code, it's all the state. It's all the data, configuration file, databases, everything, and essentially migrate them to GCP, but at the same time also transform them into containers that are running and managed by GKE, Google Kubernetes Engine. And all this is done without, in a zero-touch model, without having to rewrite or reconfigure or change the way those applications are written, which also makes it applicable for things like WebSphere, WebLogic, and existing application frameworks. So it's a really, I think, very revolutionary approach or solution that until now was not available, right?
That sounds great. How does it work?
Basically, the way that Anthos Migrate is designed, so if you recall, I mentioned before, we've been developing streaming technology that knows to take VMs and migrate them to the cloud. And we actually leverage that and build on top of that capability, except instead of doing the same streaming of VMs into VMs at the other end, what we do is essentially we think about it conceptually, taking from the VM or extracting from it in an intelligent way only non-system operating system related elements, cleaning them through some intelligent, it's called adaptation, that essentially eliminates all the elements that relate to the operating system,
right?
Taking the user mode, and then what we do is we take what we call a kind of generic container that essentially is fetches the user mode information and streams it using our streaming technology, and then runs it as a container offering all the necessary elements from the container stuff, and then on top of it, connects it to the Kubernetes engine. So we do it all kind of in one, you know, journey in one stream that contains both the streaming, right, as well as the actual transformation. Now, the interesting thing about Anthos Migrate is that we kind of built that transformation technology as orthogonal to the streaming, which means that you can either migrate and modernize at one step, taking a VM from on-premises VMware, or, by the way, soon other clouds, and then transforming them through Anthos Migrate directly into GKE, or alternatively, you can take VMs that are, again, that are running natively in GCE or other cloud and move them as well into GKE, or soon as well, being able to first, you know, move transform them from VMs to GKE on-prem, and later on, migrate them to GKE. So you can basically, we meet the customer where they are and decouple the migration from the modernization. But we can do it either one after the other in either way, or combine together, which is kind of the default way.
Once your technology has taken the user components out of the VM and moved it into the container, does the container then become something which is frozen in time, or can I go and make changes to that application?
It's a great question. So the way we look at this is kind of a multi-phase process. So in the first stage, what we do is we take the VM contents, right, outside of the OS part, and we essentially run it as a, you know, maybe view it as a nested container running in the target platform or GKE, and it gives us a certain set of benefits out of the box. Right. We call it phase one of the modernization. So the benefit you get out of the box for this is, A, you don't have to deal with OS management and patching. Mm-hmm. B, you get the density, which is critical for those legacy applications, because now you can run, you know, multiple containers in one instance. And that is, like, sometimes by our measurements could be like 5 to 7x improvement in the density, which results in a lot of cost savings, right? So this is another. Third, and most importantly, you start to get the benefits of the orchestration platform. Mm-hmm. So the resiliency, you can decide, as our say, that, you know, when machine is down, it can be brought up. You can get the visibility and monitoring. You can add things like Istio or CSM as what's called sidecar container, which gives you a whole new level of networking, security, et cetera, and all this without having to touch the actual workload. So all the benefits of the orchestration are available in phase one, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, we call this, you know, all the benefits that have to do with the platform. Now, the next phase will be, okay, now that I've migrated them, now can I actually take advantage of continuous integration using image management, right? Mm-hmm. And that's where we actually, by virtue of bringing that VM into a container, running the container, we can also introspect the actual container. And then based on that, we build essentially the way for you to get to what's called phase two, which is basically extracting the image, moving into image management, the Docker image file, the Docker creating container registry, config files or config maps, and all the elements, like decoupling the storage from the data, mm-hmm. from the image. And that will allow customers not only to get the benefits of orchestration, but also the ability to continuously develop and integrate and deploy their systems using the traditional CI/CD pipeline. One thing to keep in mind, and I didn't mention it as part of the solution, is that an important element of getting workloads into GKE is taking care of storage networking, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we do, right, remember, we're talking about running stateful workloads, is we also know to take VMs at RAND that had, you know, maybe multiple disks and multiple partitions. And we know how we created something called a storage aggregator, which essentially abstracts this whole into one kind of root file system that maps into a persistent volume, right? And that is another important element that basically abstracts it and allows you to run as, you know, again, decoupled from the logic. And that storage aggregator is an important part of our solution. But again, we use Kubernetes networking and everything that essentially gives focus on the image. So to your question about what can they do in terms of development, that comes in what we call phase two, mm-hmm. right? And phase two actually is generated on the fly incrementally. We actually create the templates that allow you later on to build on top of them all the artifacts that are needed for you to do continuous integration and then continuous development or deployment.
So if I have an application from a vendor and I have that installed on the VM in my legacy environment and I migrated V1 and modernized and gone through phase one using Anthos Migrate, then the vendor comes out and gives me V2 of this application. Am I installing that again on my legacy environment and repeating, or am I doing something in my newly migrated environment?
Yeah, so again, so the idea is if you have an image, right, that is, by the way, it could be an image that is certified by the vendor and it's already containerized, right? We'll basically know how to take that image and you can actually use it in order to provide an upgrade. You can use rolling upgrades for Kubernetes or any other way to do it. And we'll know how to, through decoupling from all the other artifacts, it will just work out of the box, right? Assuming you have this upgrade. So that's where phase two comes into play. Now, I should say, the announcement that we make this week for our beta version that's coming out is still phase one. Phase two will come shortly after. We'll have a preview of phase two coming in along with the beta, where it will be like an alpha version, and then phase two will come after.
Okay.
What are the best cases for when you would want to use Anthos Migrate? What things make most sense for using Anthos Migrate to move things into containers versus those that work more off of the traditional technology you have of migrating lift and shift VMs?
Actually, this is one of the most important questions that we're getting from customers that are playing with this new idea. They're asking us, hey, could you give us a way, a guidance, right, to recommend which workloads would go this way or another? And actually, one of the feedback that we got from our alpha customers, and which as a result, we're actually developing a module for doing discovery and providing recommendation for which way to go. This is kind of an interesting statement. Now, to your question, Adam. So the workloads that customers can today like fall into like sweet spot, right, are essentially workloads that are things like Tomcat, WebSphere, WebLogic, application frameworks, for which is also a good solution we can offer, are those that are impossible to kind of free write because you don't even, you know, sometimes not control the source code. And these are applications that are really a good fit. Or the other one that are kind of low-hanging fruit are things like bursty workloads, dev test workloads, things that you need to shrink and grow and expand. This is another kind of workloads that typically work in. But, you know, really there is no limit in a way to the type of workloads. There are some workloads that are specifically not always a good fit, right? Which we, on our discovery model, will prevent you from doing. For instance, if you have a workload that has some kernel module, right? Well, that's something that cannot be containerized because containers, by definition, strip the operating system piece out of it. So this is not going to be a good fit, right? Or if you have workloads that, you know, require immense amount of memory, you know, SAP HANA. These are things that are not good fit for containers. But typical customer, you know, transaction processing or workloads that are being done or used like on a day-to-day basis, these are the ones that we recommend. And as I said, as part of our solution, we'll actually make the recommendation. Now, look, I mean, actually, I'm thinking more along. If you have software that has some license that is tied to the hardware, right? That's another one that containers would not be a good fit for. But we've been successfully moving things like WebLogic, WebSphere, application servers, business logic, multi-tier applications, middleware-based, etc. All those workloads actually have been tested with our customers quite successfully.
You've mentioned that you've been working with customers as you've gone through the alpha phase of this product. What is the experience that they've had using the tool so far?
So we did have a chance to work with a number of alpha customers that worked with as a design partner for us, actually gave us a lot of good feedback. And so far, the experience was, so from the value proposition, the ability for them to see the density benefits that they get out of the box without having to make any changes, right? The elimination of OS patching and management headaches, and the security and the visibility that they get from the platform has been perceived really greatly by them. You know, as I said, where they were looking for more guidance is for us to help them, tell them what should they move to containers versus not. And that's something that we were not aware of and gave us the feedback to actually go and do it, essentially build that module into the discovery solution. In terms of compatibility, obviously, you know, there's this is work in progress and we've been able to fix a lot of issues, but there was no any major architectural thing that inhibited us from making the work. And they migrated successfully on a number of workloads. So they're pretty excited. And they also are, some of them are speaking on stage this week. For instance, Cardinal Health, which has been working with us for quite a bit. I mean, they've also migrated thousands of workloads for us with the VMs to VMs and now are making the next modernization, both from on-premises as well as from GCE. And there was another customer that worked with us is Atos. Which is a great partner of us for both VM to VM, but now growingly into the containerization world. And they've been, again, very excited about it. They also want support for Windows migrations. This is something that is going to be in the roadmap. Once we have support for Windows containers, they will become down the road as well. So this is, again, a missing element, but we're working on that as well.
We'll put links in the show notes to those sessions as they become available.
Could someone use Anthos Migrate to move their application to any Kubernetes cluster, or is this unique to Anthos and GKE?
Architecturally, there is no reason why this solution in general would not be applicable to other Kubernetes. We are obviously focused on Kubernetes. However, for this particular version that we have right now, and we have been focused on making it work for GKE, We will extend it also to other Anthos entities like GKE on-prem down the road. But right now, it is tied into the GKE framework. Now, you know, as Anthos vision grows and expands and, you know, spans multi-cloud, this is something we can potentially consider. But there is no architectural element that will prevent us from being able to work as long as this is tied to Kubernetes, which we are strongly tied to. So there's containers that we support as well as Kubernetes is tying the control plane for all the orchestration.
You've mentioned a couple of things about vision and roadmap. Where would you like to see this product go?
The vision that we see for Anthos Migrate is essentially being the onboarding mechanism to Anthos. And wherever Anthos goes, we go after. So as Anthos expands into on-prem, we want to provide the customers essentially the option that they have with Anthos in general with the onboarding element.
Right.
So if they want to onboard, and by the way, not only the onboarding, but also the mobility afterwards, right? So there could be customers that now, for the reason of performance or agility or cost or security, they want to go, for instance, first their security consideration or constraints that prevent them from going into the GKE. They can go to GKE on-prem. Well, meet them there. But at some point later, they're getting clearance, they can move to the cloud, or they want to take advantage of specific performance or, you know, services that are in the cloud that are not available on-prem, in which case we'll mobilize them using Anthos Migrate from on-prem, you know, whether VM or container into the cloud. So the idea is to migrate and mobilize as well as modernize your workloads throughout the Anthos span. When Anthos goes to AWS, or maybe other clouds, we'll meet them there. That's kind of where we see the vision expands along with Anthos.
If someone wants to learn more about Anthos Migrate, where can they go?
Yes, just go to cloud.google.com/velostrada.
Brilliant. All right, Izzy, thank you so much for your time with us today.
All right, thank you, guys.
You can find Izzy on Twitter at Izzy, ISSY972, and you can find all about Anthos at cloud.google.com/Anthos. Thanks for listening. As always, if you've enjoyed the show, please help us spread the word and tell a friend. If you happen to be a Google Cloud Next, come find us and grab a sticker. If you're not, and you have any other feedback for us, find us on Twitter at KubernetesPod or reach us by email at KubernetesPodcast@google.com.
You can also check out our website at KubernetesPodcast.com to find show notes and complete transcripts of each show. Until next time, take care.
See you next week.